Welcome to week two of the NFL season, and welcome to the NFL Report. We're up in Gatlinburg today and excited to be here where we first got our taste of the Daiquiri Shack last season. And you, of course, if you weren't a part of that last year, then know that you can add it to the to-do list this year, because it's the Daiquiri Shack and Grill, Margaritaville, open air opportunities, is because the windows, they open out, and so it's an incredible experience. You have the best view of the Gatlinburg Parkway or the Little Pigeon River. They're on the second floor right in front of the Margaritaville Resort, and they have so many outstanding items on their menu. One-of-a-kind char-grilled wings, grilled sandwiches and appetizers, and they have nine signature Margaritaville daiquiri flavors that are served in souvenir cups. Whether it's Havanas and Bananas, Bama Breeze, it's a full-service bar. They've got games, plenty of televisions to watch your favorite team. And so we invite you out today to the Daiquiri Shack and Grill on the Parkway in Pigeon Forge. It is just past traffic light number 3. But there is so much to get to, so much to unpack from what was an unbelievable opening week to the National Football League. And I'm John Wilkerson, pleased to be joined by Vince Farrar. Vince, how are you?
I am great, John. How about you?
Doing quite well. And some of the things we said on the show last week, we nailed.
Some
of the things we said on the show last week could not have been further from the truth. But we didn't do that intentionally.
That's why we flood the market with opinions to where we can just kind of flush the ones that we conveniently missed.
Yeah. How did that go? But anyhow, what stood out? Well, actually, I'll tell you what. What we'll do is we'll take a second and we'll say hello to Joel Silverberg, who joins the panel this morning. Joel, how are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be on the NFL Report. Year 20. Oh, gosh,
yes.
I can't believe it. Congratulations on this milestone. This is fantastic.
Yeah, it's been a minute or two since we started the show, but it's great to have you on with us. And also heard you on the Football Digest last night, so certainly hope all is well in your world.
Doing fantastic. Thank you.
And so this week got underway with the Thursday night tilt, and what a wild finish it was. The Giants playing at Washington. Giants were in position to win the game. Washington had other ideas. Neither team had timeouts at the end. Offsides on the missed field goal attempt. Try number 2. Good. Washington 30, the Giants 29. That was the first game of this week, and it just seemed to pick up where week 1 left off. So let's run through everything that took place as the curtain went up on the NFL season 2021. Tampa Bay was a winner last Thursday over Dallas with a last-second field goal. Maybe that's going to be a trait on Thursday night games. 31-29, the final in that one. It was the Bengals beating the Vikings with a last-second victory in overtime, as on the last play of overtime, the Bengals got the game winner over Minnesota. It was a long afternoon for the Titans in Nashville. Arizona scored early, scored often, and kept scoring. 38-13 the final. Arizona gets the win. Tough day for the Titans. Seattle gets the win in Indianapolis as the Seahawks win over the Colts 28-16. Broncos got their first September win since 2018. That's not good, but the Broncos beat the Giants 27-13. Teddy Bridgewater looked pretty good for the Denver Broncos. The Eagles went to Atlanta and took down the Dirty Birds in a big way, 32-6 the final, as Philly gets the win for their new coach and knocking off another new coach in the process. The Steelers rallied down 10-0 at the half, 17 fourth-quarter points. Impressive win for Pittsburgh at Buffalo, as the Bills fall to the Steelers 23-16. 49ers won a shootout in Detroit. They led big 31-10 at the half and then kind of held on for dear life at the end, 41-33 the final. The Chargers were a winner in our nation's capital over Washington 20-16. It was the Panthers leading 16-0 at the half, and then credit the Jets for the rally as they play behind their rookie quarterback. But the Panthers in the end, 5 points better than the Jets, 19-14. The Texans didn't look anything like we thought they might, 37-21 over Jacksonville. Jaguars, perhaps it was a throwback, perhaps to last year when they were 1-15, but they lost by 16 points, spoiling the debuts of one, Trevor Lawrence, as well as Urban Meyer. And then it was the Browns in position to get a huge win in Kansas City, but then the Chiefs do what the Chiefs do under Patrick Mahomes, and that's win in September. He's never lost a September game, has never thrown a September interception. That's crazy. But the Chiefs rally for the 33-29 win as the Browns were limited to just 7 points in the second half, whereas the Chiefs put 23 on the board, 10 in the third quarter, 13 in the fourth. The Dolphins hang on for a 17-16 win in New England. Big road win for Miami. And in a game played in Jacksonville, because the Saints weren't able to play at home, New Orleans 38, Green Bay 3. It was 17-3 at the half. It didn't get better after that for Aaron Rodgers and company. Jameis Winston, 5 touchdown passes. And the most touchdown passes with the fewest passing yards. 5 touchdown passes, less than 150 yards passing. But the Saints, very, very good in their 38-3 thrashing of Green Bay. The Rams and Matthew Stafford looked pretty good as they outscored the Bears 34-14. And then it was a back-and-forth affair. It was a 14-point deficit at one point for the Raiders against Baltimore. But in the end, in overtime, it was Las Vegas getting the win over the Ravens 33-27. So, Vince Ferrara, lead us off. What was your game of the week for last week?
Well, because it was still part of Game 1, we have to go back to Thursday night and the season opener with Tampa Bay and the Dallas Cowboys. It was entertaining. It was high profile. You had Dak Prescott outperforming anyone's expectations of what he would be like coming off of his injury and not only playing in the preseason, but not practicing all that much in the preseason. You had a close game, came down to the wire. I think the Cowboys showed at least a little bit of improvement defensively. It's obviously a great team, and it's just the way it unfolded. It was just so weird to see Dallas not utilize Ezekiel Elliott, but then still be so effective in that game. So even though it was a little bit farther back, and we talked about it a touch last week, to me, you got to go back to the season opener in Dallas and Tampa Bay for week one.
I don't blame you for wanting to talk about your team another week. The defending world champs. No, it was just an outstanding contest as it went back and forth. The Cowboys in a position to get the win, and then Tom Brady and the Bucs having enough time to go down and snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. Joel, what did you think in terms of the lid lifter? Because Cowboys, after such a disappointing 2020 campaign, healthier team, even though that's changed since that game to this week, even though they had a couple of extra days to prepare for the Chargers, they've taken some lumps when it comes to their roster. But the return of Dak Prescott and what looks to be the onset of a breakout season for CeeDee Lamb, who was pretty good last year as a rookie.
I thought he was really good as a rookie, and I thought he had a great season opener last Thursday, and Amari Cooper had his share of plays as well. So now it's not just that you have this emergence of Lamb, but you have a nice 1-2 combination that Dak Prescott can use, and they're still figuring some things out with Michael Gallup and a couple of other guys that they have in that passing game. Let's see what the offensive line looks like long term. But I was impressed with Dallas's offense. I thought they did some really good things. But, yeah, CeeDee Lamb definitely stands out a lot. And now you've got a really nice combination in that passing game with Prescott, Lamb, and Cooper.
And then also with Tampa, they return so much, and it's so difficult to defend. What do you think in terms of, I mean, just all things considered going into this season, being the reigning Super Bowl champion, holding that trophy, what chances would you give a team to repeat just based on having won the previous year and knowing that they're going to get everybody's best game as they try to knock them off that perch?
It's so tough to actually repeat in this league, and it's only been done once since Tom Brady came into the NFL, and he's the only one to do it. And I guess that's the one thing that Tampa has going for them is that they've got the last quarterback to do it, the only quarterback to do it this century. So it's just going to be so tough, and you wonder, okay, are the Chiefs going to get back there? Are they really going to get stymied by that Bucs defense again if they were to meet in that situation? Do the Packers turn it around? Are the Saints for real? There's a lot of questions in the NFC right now. So to get back there, I think the division opens up for them a lot more this season than it did a year ago because New Orleans did win the NFC South. But all in all, I think they have as good a chance as anybody. I think they probably have one of the more likely repeat odds of any team over the last 5 to 10 years. And so I think when you look at, Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski showed up in week one. He appears to be rejuvenated after having a slow start to last season. I don't see why they can. I think we've just seen with the parity towards the top of the league, it's so tough to repeat in the NFL.
Vince, as we did our preseason predictions last week, you did not take your guys to win the Super Bowl. What percentage chance would you give them to have a shot to be in that mix?
It's on the board, but I don't think it's a very high percentage. I would put it in that 10 to 20 range. You can't discount them because of Tom Brady, because they bring back the starting 22, and because they have now winning culture that Brady has helped instill in that organization. There's so many factors that come into play in preventing teams from repeating. Motivation, that's something that's always a concern. How motivated is that team that won it? How motivated is everyone else week after week to give Tampa Bay their best shot? And then maybe the biggest thing is health. Mm-hmm. And we've already seen the Bucs be hit with some injuries to their secondary. And that's something that could play a factor in keeping Tampa Bay from repeating. I think they'll have a great regular season, but something I think will happen in the end that will prevent them from doing that, because it is so difficult and they don't have this giant gap between them and everybody else that others can't get to, and that gap can't easily close or someone pass them when it comes to crunch time in the postseason.
Do you think it's more of an age thing? Do you think in terms of it's a very veteran roster, but they also have an influx of some very young talent, especially on the defensive side, but what do you think? Is it just odds that is the biggest hurdle for Tampa?
Odds and health and motivation. Those would be a few of the biggest ones.
But wouldn't they want to see Tom Brady on another boat parade?
Yes.
I don't know about the motivation for you, Joel Silverberg, but I think that's more video we need to see.
I just want to see him break his record for the farthest thrown Lombardi trophy.
I'm not sure that the franchise wants to see an attempt.
I think my favorite part of that was when the Tampa Bay Lightning tweeted at Tom Brady saying, "Hey, just so you know, our trophy's a little heavier."
Yeah, that was good.
And then, to me, the best video was people escorting him out when he was absolutely lit drunk.
Yes.
So maybe there's motivation to see that Tom Brady once again. I don't know. But I think that they are not this unreachable juggernaut that a few of these things happening in the slightest can't bring him back to the pack when it matters the most. But they'll have a great regular season and either have the best record or the second best record. I think they'll be that good in the regular season.
And as far as the Dallas Cowboys go, again, I thought Dak Prescott gave them every opportunity to win. I should say their offense gave them every opportunity to win. They've got some compelling contributors. But they also, again, you've got one of your best, if not your best, offensive linemen that's now going to be on the shelf for about a third of the season based on a suspension for substance, the substance abuse policy in Collins. And that's a significant chip. You also are shorthanded on the defensive line. And so what do you think in terms of Dallas? They had this incredible stretch to where after opening against the reigning world champs, they weren't going to play another, I believe, playoff team until like week 11. And so this was the stretch where they can make hay. They still can. But I just wonder, you start with the Chargers, and I don't give them the greatest opportunity to be able to knock this opportunity down.
No, and that's where some of the stats and people say, you know, the whole playoff thing, well, those change every year. So I think Dallas, that's a perfect example today. Yeah, maybe they don't have very many playoff teams on the stretch, but I think the Chargers are either a playoff team this year or are going to be contending for it. So I think it's a dicey situation. You lose DeMarcus Lawrence for an extended period of time. He is by far their best pass rusher, and I think he's their best defender. They're just not deep enough or good enough yet. They have some names at linebacker. They're still young, potentially could be good down the road with their corners in Trevon Diggs and Jordan Lewis. Anthony Brown had 11 tackles last week. So, but still, they're adjusting to their scheme. I think they were a little bit better last week against Tampa Bay, but they're not deep enough. They don't have the talent there right now to where you start losing guys. I think that's an issue for them. And if you fall to 0-2, now you're going to have a lot of people questioning Mike McCarthy, and people are going to start to really panic, despite all of the talent and ability on the offensive side, because they do have a ton of skill. But when things went down last year, went south, the offensive line was a part of it. It wasn't just Dak.
Yeah, and you look at how last year unfolded, especially when you had some veterans that were anonymously saying that they didn't think that the team was prepared as it should have been, despite a very veteran staff as led by Mike McCarthy being on hand. And what do you think? Do you think there's any carryover from that to this year? Do you think there's anything in terms of Jerry Jones or his son maybe being swayed by, is this staff, are we getting all of it, as much out of it as we should? They've never been bashful in the past, Vince, when it comes to making a change, but do you think that there's anything that just kind of is one of those devils on your shoulder that says, hey, I don't know if you're going to stick with this. If you should, as you mentioned, if they go to 0-2 and they struggle today, not that they will, I mean, they could be 1-1 after the end of the day, but do you think there's anything that would carry over from last year that might cloud their judgment for this year? Or do you think it's just going to be what we've seen the Jones family do?
I think the members of the circus still come out of the trailer, and they're still members of the circus, whether it's last year or this year, and that's kind of the way things run there in Dallas. Now, Jerry Jones was way too patient with Jason Garrett, but Garrett was one of his boys. He had that background with him and that connection with that personal connection with him. I don't think he's got that loyalty with Mike McCarthy, so I think he will have a quicker trigger. The question is if things start to go really bad this year, how much is he working, say, the college scene and trying to get somebody a splash higher from the college scene and have somebody ready to go and then make a move? That's what I can see him working on, because he doesn't have the background with McCarthy that he did with Jason Garrett. But I think this year they have their own challenges. Now, maybe they look impressive today, and then they write things, they look better defensively, and then, you know, it's a different conversation. But that's going to be a wave that we're going to ride all season with the Cowboys.
What do you think, Joel?
I agree. I think we're kind of getting into this cycle with Dallas where the expectations are high because they usually do have the talent. Dallas hasn't been one of these irrelevant franchises, and granted, the market demands it, but Dallas really hasn't been one of these teams that doesn't have the talent, just doesn't have the players. There's usually guys that you can build a team around, and it's just been a matter of a lack of execution in other areas. And last season, obviously Dak going down, but the defense has really had its issues. But you have those offensive superstars in Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, Amari Cooper. Now you're adding CeeDee Lamb into the mix. You had Jason Witten there for a long time. Tony Romo was a notable quarterback. You had Dez Bryant. And so that sort of thing has continued on and on. But the cycle, I think, has really revolved around the head coach, because to me, it never really worked with Jason Garrett. You had one great season where you fell short in the playoffs in Dak's rookie year. And other than that, it was pretty much, okay, 8-8, and then the NFC East is going to come down to the last game of the season, and then the winner is going to lose in the wild card round at home. So, and that was ultimately what it was last year, where you have a team under 500 going on to win the division, and then Washington gets eliminated by Tampa, and that's it for the NFC East in the playoffs. So I think Mike McCarthy has already started to come into question a little bit. And I think Vince is right. If you go down to the Chargers today and you're 0-2, granted, one of those losses is to the defending AFC champions, the defending Super Bowl champions in the NFC, you're not going to be able to justify an 0-2 start when you look at how disappointing last season was.
We'll get a break. We've got a lot coming your way today. We're with you until 12:30. And we will lead into pregame coverage of what is more NFL action that you can hear right here on The Sports Animal. And today, We've got a good one with San Francisco against Philadelphia. That'll be the early game. Then tonight, another NFL game that you'll be able to hear. This will be after your opportunity to hear the nation. But tonight, pregame starts at 7:30, Kansas City and Baltimore. And then more action tomorrow night, Monday Night Football, as you'll be able to hear Detroit at Green Bay. Vince, it's a boatload of NFL action that we've got this year, more than 80-plus games, and folks can find the schedule on our wonderful website.
That's right, 991thesportsanimal.com. Just click on the sports tab or hover over the sports tab and just look for NFL schedule on the Sports Animal, and you'll see all the 80-plus games that we know of right now, because some late games still are be determined on what those broadcasts will be, but we'll have a lot of them. It's awesome, all the primetime games, and how about how they delivered in week one? So entertaining, and we had all of them. That'll continue to be the case.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson, Joel Silverberg, along for the ride this weekend as you listen to the NFL Report on 99.1 The Sports Animal. The NFL Report continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Vince Ferrara. Also on the panel, Joel Silverberg, as we make our way looking back at week one, the start to the season, and get you ready for week two. Again, the reminder, 12:30, pregame coverage begins for what should be a very good matchup, as you had a lot of points scored by the two teams that square off today in the city of brotherly love, that's San Francisco at Philadelphia. But Joel, what was your game of the week for week one?
My game of the week was Chiefs-Browns. I thought there was all this potential hype lingering around that game, and I thought it lived up to it. The Browns played really well, got off to a really good start, showing maybe last season wasn't a fluke, and then in typical Chiefs fashion, they find a way to come up with some big plays. You've got the botched punt snap there in the second half by Cleveland, and then Patrick Mahomes, in typical fashion, scrambling and just says, screw it, Tyreek's down there somewhere, throws a deep ball, comes up with a big play, and the Chiefs come out with a win. I thought it was a really good, I thought it was a good effort by Cleveland, while also a good performance by Kansas City in the second half to come back and win that football game.
Yeah, the Browns did a number of good things. They led 8-3 after the first. They led 22-10 at the half, but then just really couldn't get that same momentum going in the second half. And Joel, what do you think in terms of the stats that are there? Patrick Mahomes has never lost a game in September. Has never thrown a September interception. As he just seems to be a guy that's raring to go as soon as the curtain rises.
That's just an unreal stat. The record for one thing, but then the touchdown to interception ratio for a single month, to be able to start off every month being that effective, that efficient, feeling like you're already in mid-season form, and then when mistakes do happen later in the season, they're not going to pile up because it's so much easier for you to hit the reset button. And so you're just never starting behind the eight ball with Kansas City. And I think if you're Patrick Mahomes, it's a great place to be. It always puts you out in front in the division because you're likely facing a division opponent or two during the first month of the season, which means you're getting off to a good start in the AFC West. So those numbers, those stats, and we've brought them up the last couple of Septembers now, but they just continue to get more and more wild. And we still have to get through the rest of this September, but still another impressive season debut for Pat Mahomes in Kansas City.
Yeah, and I mean, tip of the cap to Baker Mayfield. He had 321 yards passing, did not have a touchdown pass, had an interception, but Cleveland was able to score four touchdowns on the ground. Nick Chubb had a pair, Kareem Hunt had one, Jarvis Landry ran one in. Kansas City didn't do a great job running the football, but you saw what you were already alluding to, 337 yards from Mahomes, three touchdowns, no interceptions. He was sacked twice, just as Baker Mayfield was, but Vince, you see the usual suspects, and that is Tyreek Hill, 11 catches, 197 yards and a score. Travis Kelce, 6 receptions, 76 yards, 2 touchdowns. It's just the problem continues to be, how do you account for all of the wizardry that Mahomes can create when it looks like you may have him dead to rights, and it's whether it's a run or finding the open guy or just looking for one of his two top targets in Kelce or Hill.
That's with them not really having a dominant run game.
Yeah.
Imagine if
73 yards on the day.
Yeah. Imagine if they get that aspect going. And I think they've tried, and I think they'll continue to. But when you have those kind of weapons that are just good on their own, much less having Mahomes create magic and throw some of those deep balls up and let Tyreek Hill just go get them. Or somehow Travis Kelce is wide open in the end zone when you know who he is and where he is and as big as he is. Those kind of things happen because of all of the options and the difficulty in defending all of them. I think Andy Reid just does a masterful job in keeping all those guys happy and making sure that they find creative ways to force teams to have to make decisions and then leave somebody else open. And Mahomes, with his off-platform throws and the creativity they operate with offensively, is pretty special. Now, again, they're not this perfect outfit on defense, but they're good enough, and they continue to show it. Last week was a lot of the same from what we've seen from those two teams, although I think maybe a little bit of the criticism of the Browns is a little strong. I still think they took a big step last year. I still think that's a game that they can build and have some confidence from. It's just a matter of cleaning some of those late game things up, if they can possibly do it. But I still came out of that not totally down on the Browns like some people are.
Yeah, I don't think that would be my first jump, simply for the fact that they did a lot of good things to be in the position they were. Granted, you have to finish,
right?
But they're on the road. I think it might be more worthy of criticism if this happened at their place. And I just think that Cleveland has shown once again that when you look at the talent that they've assembled, they are going to be a factor. Now, Pittsburgh, to me, took a big step because they rallied the way they did, one at Buffalo. The Ravens were in a perfect position to open with a road win. They failed to finish their opportunity just as Cleveland did. And I thought perhaps there were more criticisms. Now, and also the Ravens, we know, have been hit not just hard, but really hard by injury with some key players. And they just keep rotating through and another level down on their running back rotation. So I do think that there are some things that factor into the conversation. But I would look at Baltimore's situation and say they have a lot more to answer to than Cleveland's situation in losing at Kansas City compared to the Ravens losing in Vegas.
I would agree with that. And Baltimore is also, I think they're the oldest team in the NFL. So they've got some age to them as well. You have that extra game in the regular season now. They've had playoff games to add to their bodies over the last few seasons. So I agree with you. I think there are a few more questions about the Ravens. The Browns got to get Odell Beckham Jr. back. We haven't been able to see him, but and obviously Baker Mayfield is going to need to be better in those clutch situations. So yeah, I would agree. I think it's a few more questions on the Ravens right now, especially because the Ravens are staring 0-2 in the face.
Yes.
And more so than Cleveland with Kansas City at their place on Sunday night.
Yeah. And as obviously, the Ravens have this chance, Joel, to get right back after it by playing host to the Chiefs. The Chiefs have had Baltimore's number. And first, before we get into that, but what do you think in terms of the prospects for Cleveland? I had the Browns winning the AFC North. I wouldn't change it after week one because, one, I like their head coach. I think he did a really nice job last year, and I think he'll have them in the position they want to be in at the end of the year. But just your thoughts on where Cleveland stands after failing to finish what was an incredible opportunity there in Kansas City.
Well, I thought Cleveland and Baltimore were the two best teams in the AFC North. And obviously it's just 1 week, but it's kind of funny to look at how the Steelers and the Bengals are 1-0 against the Bills and the Vikings. And then you're looking at the Browns and the Ravens being 0-1, and just the way the Ravens lost on Monday night, a game that they probably should have had, a pretty frustrating way for Lamar Jackson to lose. So, yeah, I like Cleveland and Baltimore a lot, both moving forward. It's just so much tougher now in Baltimore's case because you're right, you are staring 0-2 in the face. The Browns still have to be careful, and I think moving forward, it's and the percentages of teams that – you know, make the playoffs from being 0-1 or 0-2 versus winning a game in their first or second week, that's going to change over time because now you have that extra playoff spot to work with in each conference. So I still think you've got a little bit more room for error than you've had in the past, but definitely a lot of urgency for Baltimore today. But I do think Cleveland is developing more as a whole. It's not just a matter of, oh, okay, you've got a couple of good guys, you've got a quarterback that can make some plays. I really think that entire team has taken a step forward, that you saw it over the course of last season. They really showed that they were for real when they whipped up on Pittsburgh in the postseason. And so I think you're starting to see that translate to this year as well. And now the Browns are off on the right foot, despite the loss to Kansas City last week.
Yeah, and Kansas City can do the Browns a favor tonight by winning their fifth straight game against the Ravens. And what do you think in terms of the matchup? I think that when you look at Lamar Jackson and the fact that, I mean, he had them in position to win, but it was also a couple of turnovers that took that opportunity and clouded it a good bit, because the Raiders were able to take advantage of that, pull even in the game, and get the win in overtime. Where do you think Lamar Jackson is in yet another big-time marquee showdown with Patrick Mahomes?
I think he's ready for it. I think he's going to come out with a chip on his shoulder, and I think the Ravens are going to be ready to go. It's just such a tough task, and as we spent time talking about, Patrick Mahomes hasn't lost in September. Patrick Mahomes hasn't thrown an interception in September. So I think when you're kind of thinking about Baltimore, you think of a team that wins games by forcing takeaways, and you may not have that luxury. You may not be able to do that tonight. You've got to find a way to stop that Kansas City offense, and if you're Lamar Jackson, you have to go out and play mistake-free football and put some points on the board.
There was a moment last week during the game that I want to hit on and just see if you agree with how the league handled it. You have Brown safety Ronnie Harrison Jr. He's over near the Kansas City sideline. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is down on the ground. And I'll say this, having seen players that, oh my goodness, I have no idea where I'm about to step, and then step on a player because they know he's right there, I thought that his actions, Harrison's, were punishable, because he looked back and forth, and then you see him raise his leg high, and then he steps down, and he steps on the Edwards-Helaire. You have the running backs coach, Greg Lewis of the Chiefs, who steps in to protect his guy and gives Harrison a hard shove backwards. Harrison responds, as many would, and that is to shove back. Now, it was more of a shove to the chest by the assistant coach. It was more of a shove towards the upper body and or face by Harrison, who was ejected because he did that right in front of officials, which shows you he was indeed caught up in the moment. Otherwise, he couldn't have been surprised by what happened after that. But where I'm curious, the NFL fines him more than $12,000 for shoving the assistant coach. The coach, however, who shoved first, got no penalty. He was not fined or disciplined for his actions. What do you think in terms of that situation? And did you happen to see the video?
I did see it. I saw the situation, and as far as, yeah, I mean, there's probably a little bit of acting going on there by Harrison with the whole Edwards-Helaire thing, but I think for Greg Lewis, there's no reason for him to get involved there. And I get it, former NFL player, you've been in the heat of the moment of that situation before, you're wanting to defend your guys, but you've got an entire sideline of professional football players that will all step in and do that. And J.C. Tretter, who, granted, plays for the opposing team, but is still the president of the players union, he thought that Greg Lewis should have been punished. And he thinks that the league needs to hold the coaches to a higher standard, if not the same standard, for that they do for players. Because if that's just another player that Harrison shoves, there's probably not a fine. There's probably a personal foul penalty. I think it's good that there wasn't a suspension, but I still disagree with the fact that Lewis got off scot-free and all of that, especially since, and here's the thing, it does not justify what Harrison did. What he did was wrong, but he was provoked nonetheless.
What do you think, Vince?
Well, there's blame on both sides. I don't think either side of him.
I agree.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I thought, again, it was a punishable offense. As Joel mentioned, I think it should have been perhaps a penalty, but what did you think in terms of the assistant coach kind of instigating his or inserting himself into the equation?
I think because he has fault too, he should have been fined also. Another aspect of it, and another reason why he should be fined and maybe even more, is because coaches should have a higher standard. So I don't understand why a guy coming in there, and yes, he's defending his player, but you cannot be in there sparking those situations And pulling guys away, that's one thing. But to get in there and shove a player, you can't have that precedent. And he should have a higher standard, so he should have been fined and punished somehow.
Yeah, I would agree with that qualifier. Some coaches, of course, find themselves in a position where you're trying to separate two guys that are starting to go at it. Mm-hmm. And so when you, if you were to put your hands on an opposing player in that instance, as long as, Joel, you were talking about, as long as it's not inflammatory, then you're doing, I think, the right thing. I do think that the coach was wrong. And, Joel, I had the exact same thought you did. You've got players that are all there on the sideline. Let them be the bouncers and or defenders, because you just shouldn't cross that line, because you are crossing a line. And I thought you painted the perfect picture. You're a coach. Even though you have playing experience and your chili might run hot to begin with, you just need to make sure that you stay on the other side of that line, unless, again, you're trying to separate and cool the situation as opposed to inflame it. I thought the NFL missed the boat significantly by not fining him because, again, he's the one that shoved. Granted, you had the action of the field that carried over to the sideline. That was part of it. And, again, Harrison deserved a penalty that was going to come his way. But I just, if you're going to fine the player, you need to fine the assistant. And that's where it's a bit disappointing from the league.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there's a step and then there's the push from Harrison. So he's certainly warranted punishment for sure on his end.
So the Chiefs with the big win, the Browns a missed opportunity. We'll get a break. A final segment of this first hour of the NFL Report is coming up. And again, it's our privilege today to be here in Gatlinburg at the Daiquiri Shack and Grill. It's an open-air bar, incredible dining experience. On the one side, you've got a great view of the Gatlinburg Parkway, the best view of it. On the other side, you've got the Little Pigeon River. So it's all right there. They've got a fantastic menu, and they have 9 signature Margaritaville Daiquiri flavors that are served in souvenir cups. You're talking about a full-service bar. They've got all kinds of things for you to enjoy, plenty of televisions to watch all the action. We're here at the Daiquiri Shack, just past light number 3 in Gatlinburg, as you listen to the NFL Report on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Chiefs are 7-10 on third down, trailing 29-27. Mahomes throws it left, caught, stretching, touchdown! Travis Kelce, touchdown, Kansas City! And for the first time in this regular season, the Chiefs have the lead.
We'll make another $500 donation to the runner. It was blocked, picked up by the Steelers, into the end zone. That's a Pittsburgh touchdown on the block punt. Yuli Gilbert blocked a punt, and running it into the end zone was Terrell Edmonds for the touchdown.
UG3, Billy. It was UG3, Ulysses Gilbert III.
Huge moment for the Pittsburgh Steelers as they rallied. They were down going into the fourth quarter, 17 points in that last quarter, and they come away with a 23-16 win in Buffalo. This is the final segment of this first hour of the NFL Report. I'm John Wilkerson with Vince Ferrara. We're here in Gatlinburg at the Daiquiri Shack. Joel Silverberg also on the panel. I had Buffalo winning its division and perhaps being the biggest challenger to Kansas City on that side of the ledger, whereas I had Pittsburgh on the outside looking in. But with the Steelers' victory in this game, I think Pittsburgh says, at least at this point, you're talking about a lot of veterans, also an aging quarterback. Pittsburgh started fast last year and then faltered badly at the end. But the Steelers certainly came away with a huge chip to put on their shoulder, as well as a very significant victory for their back pocket with the win in Buffalo. So I had this as my game of the week. Buffalo looked exactly what you thought they might in the first half. Give the Steelers a lot of credit for how hard they played and how they won in the second half. Ben Roethlisberger didn't set the world on fire. Didn't have to, because you had other facets of the game that stepped up. The Steelers did a great job really containing that Bills running attack, and that seemed to really put the handcuffs on that explosive offense. Just a quick thought, Vince Ferrara, on the win for Pittsburgh and Buffalo, a stumble out of the gate. You don't want to lose a home game like that.
No doubt. It was very surprising. I have Buffalo in the Super Bowl, and so I expected a lot more from them, especially offensively at home. And you know, Pittsburgh did outperform what my expectations were. I didn't think Buffalo would blow them out, but Buffalo outplayed Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh couldn't do much on offense, but they figured things out in the second half, and then a lot of mistakes from the Bills afterwards.
Quick thought on your part, Joel.
Yeah, I was disappointed with the Bills' offense, and I was expecting Josh Allen to come out and have a bigger first game, especially with all the pieces that he has around him. Couldn't take advantage of short fields early on, back-to-back missed fourth down opportunities in the second half. I just wasn't impressed by Buffalo. I thought it was a really good win for Pittsburgh.
Little more than a minute to go in the hour. Why don't we go ahead and dole out a little bit of discipline? Joel Silverberg, you can lead us off. Who deserves one across the chops for week one?
I'll take the low-hanging fruit and take Greg Lewis. No reason for him to get involved in a situation like that. I get it, former player mentality, wanting to protect his guy, but if Ronnie Harrison was intentionally stepping on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, there are other guys on that sideline that can step in to take the initiative to defend a teammate like that. That's not his role as a coach. He doesn't need to do that.
Vince Ferrara?
Same game. Browns punter Jamie Gillen. You have one job. You got to catch the snap, get the punt off, and that led to a short field for the Browns. It was a big part of that meltdown late for the Browns. Jamie Gillen, Browns punter.
I'm going to go with Giants coach Joe Judge. There was a touchdown scored by the Broncos in the second half of that game. And while the fans might have reacted to the video, you go ahead and let them react. He throws out the challenge flag, which, hey, by the way, news flash, they're automatically reviewed. Since turnovers and scoring plays are automatically reviewed, you can't challenge. And you get penalized if you throw the flag. So what Giants lose? A timeout. What happened? The touchdown stood. Joe Judge, you make your players and the coaches run. I hope you ran for that. Here are your just desserts.